Okay, welcome back to this second module of this week, which is still focused on relationships and meeting your needs and other people's needs, in particular, your partner's needs. So let's get started here. I hope that the human needs that we went over in the last module are starting to really sink in. I know it was a lot, and it takes some time to start really applying that and really seeing it in everyday life. But I really want you to practice when you are coming across somebody who's talking to you about something, whether it's at work or at home or just a random person in the grocery store or wherever you may be, a neighbor. I want you to think about when they're sharing something, start thinking about what need is it in them that is active right now. You'll start really noticing, oh, this person really wants to be recognized, or this person is really looking for some certainty. And it'll start, it's an amazing lens to when you're interacting with other people in your life to realize what are they looking for right now. And then the second part of that is, how can I actually respond in a way that meets their needs? Because when you're responding to someone and you're tuned in with what it is you think that they want and need, and a conversation can really turn into a really lovely conversation, you can have much deeper, more connected relationships. I've certainly used this with employers and bosses in terms of business and work situations when I've got in particular, a situation I'm thinking of, an old boss who was coming to talk to me about something and kept coming to talk to me about something. And I actually was pretty irritated with this person. But then I looked, okay, what is this person really asking me for? Where are they coming from? When I saw that they were coming from a place of needing significance, looking to be significant, and when they were also coming from a place of looking to know exactly what they could count on, which was certainty, my response to my employer's request, rather than be annoyed about his delivery of that or the things he was asking me for, was much more strategic. And this was an employer that actually had a boss that had not a great reputation among a lot of the staff. But for whatever reason, and I think it's not for whatever reason, it's because I was using this with particular skill, when I spoke and addressed anything I said that was aimed at these needs, he adored me. I was promoted. He, even after he left this organization, continually sought me out to come work with him in other situations. So he really felt that I was on his side. And in fact, I saw him with a lot more compassion because I was able to see him through this lens and looked at what that he was actually going for in terms of his own human needs. So sometimes when I talk about this with people, they think, well, this is really manipulative. Aren't you just actually manipulating people in the way that you want? And it's not manipulative insofar as you think it's manipulating your children to give them the love and support that they need in order for them to be the human beings you want them to be and do the things that you want them to do in the home. If you're supportive, if you're providing positive reinforcement, we don't think, oh, you're manipulating your child, right? You're just saying, no, I'm creating the conditions in which this child can flourish. I'm creating the conditions in which this relationship can flourish. So that's how I want you to think about it. It's not manipulative. It's strategic. It feels actually better for you or for me when I'm doing that. And the other person sees you in a much more open and receptive way. So continue to practice that. Practice it at home. You can think about it even with your kids. But also practice it in relationships that are less, where you have less investment. So the people you're just kind of running across in your everyday, just see if you can practice knowing what is it that this person is actually needing? What human needs are active in them right now? So in this module, we're going to look at needs from another perspective altogether, right? And if you think about a fuel tank, right? And if you think about your relationships, all of your relationships, I will be primarily speaking about romantic, significant, relationships, but you, this can apply to any single relationship you have with your children, for instance. We all, sometimes we're operating on kind of just autopilot, right? We're on autopilot. We're going through the motions, especially in our marriages and those relationships. It's not particularly fulfilling. It's not horrible, but it's not fulfilling. Or maybe it is kind of sliding into the pile of horrible or just really unpleasant. But relationships and people are, if you think about it, they have basically a fuel tank, right? And we know what we know about fuel, right, is different things need different types of fuel. You're not going to put the same fuel in your boat that you're going to put in your truck. And you might actually have two cars, like a truck and a regular car, that take completely different types of fuel. And it's not that one type of fuel is better than the other. It's just that this is a different vehicle that takes a different kind of fuel. And we want to think about people exactly in the same way in terms of what fuels them, how they receive love. In fact, the kind of love that fuels them, that makes their engines run smoothly and cleanly, right? If we put diesel in a Prius, it's not going to run smoothly and cleanly. It just isn't. It's going to say, no, thank you. I don't like this. This fuel doesn't mean anything to me. And in fact, it's dragging me down, right? So if you think of yourself and your partner as having an emotional bank account or an emotional fuel tank, we want to think about how you're fueling that person, right? When you've got a lot of gas in the tank, you're running smoothly. You feel appreciated. You feel loved. You feel pretty dang good. You feel like that person understands me, I feel connected to them. And when the tank is low, things aren't going so smoothly, right? You might feel lonely, depressed, numb, criticized, right? You might just feel like you're going through the motions and not really feeling much of anything, right? So if you look at your relationship through this lens, where is the gauge for you right now? Are you on empty? Could some of the negative things happening in your relationship now, maybe the criticism, the withdrawal, or some of the harsh words that are sometimes exchanged, could those be occurring because you're on an empty tank? You've got an empty tank, or your partner has an empty tank. When tanks are on empty, we do not have the resources, the internal resources, to respond effectively. And if we could find a way to fill our fuel tank, our own tank, back up, could a marriage, could a relationship be revitalized? So keeping this emotional love tank full is important to a marriage. It's as important as maintaining the proper oil levels in your car, right? But running your marriage on empty may cost you even more than trying to drive your car without oil. So when you think about it, on a scale of 1 to 10, how full is your love tank? Really be honest with yourself here. How full, if 10 is, I feel like my partner completely appreciates me, loves me in the way I need to be loved, is meeting my needs, I feel supported, backed up, cared about, right? How full is your tank from 0 to 10? 0 means I'm on empty, and 10 is I'm full, I feel good, I feel supported. Okay, write your number down. And now, honestly, looking at yourself honestly, if we were to bring your partner into this conversation, how do you think that they would answer? What number do you think they would give from 0 to 10? This isn't about anything you're doing wrong. Let's just look. Does she feel empty? Does she feel kind of that she's at, like her tank is just empty, she's running on empty? Or do you think she feels supported, loved, connected, excited, filled up with good love fuel? And what do your numbers look like, right? Keeping a love tank full is just like keeping the right oil levels in your car. It's not going to run without it. And you have to fill a person's love tank with the fuel that they specifically need. Fuel isn't the same for everybody. You're not going to fill a semi with the same type of gas that you do as a Prius. And one type of fuel isn't better or worse. It just is. It's not that unleaded is better type of fuel, because that doesn't make any sort of difference if you're putting that into a machine that takes diesel, right? So you, it's not about good or bad or all the, or anything that you're doing wrong. It's just about starting to recognize what type of fuel is needed for this particular person. How does that person's engine run? So we're going to talk about the different types of fuel and what you can do about it. So this is how you fill the tank, right? You have to do this by knowing what her love language is, right? Some of you may have thought about or even read or heard about love languages before. It's a pretty popular theory and book about how people give and receive love and how to do that effectively. And there are 5 main types. Everyone has 1 or 2 that typically jump out as their primary ways. So I want you to take notes as we walk through these now and see if you can figure out what yours are, number one, and also what your partner's might be. Typically people can make a pretty good guess based on what they know about their partner. And kudos to you if you guys have already had this conversation. That puts you light years ahead. So the first love language is words of affirmation. And this is all about what is being communicated in words, verbally or written. This is things like complimenting, using simple, straightforward statements is best about, you look amazing in that outfit. Or, thanks for getting the babysitter lined up. It means a lot to me that you organized a night out for us. And a compliment can be about lots of things. It could be about noticing how much that person is doing, noticing their physical appearance, things that they're doing well, things that you appreciate about them, but it actually is words coming out of your mouth, right? This is an amazing dinner. Thank you so much. Or thank you so much for running that errand. It really allowed me to get what I needed to get done. So can you remember the last time you actually doled out a compliment? And remember that thing we talked about in last week's modules about that 5-to-1 ratio as being a predictor of divorce, right? For every 1 negative thing you say, you need 5 positive things, right? If this is your partner's love language, it means that that saying nice things is particularly powerful. I know one couple that's been married for, I think they're 30 years this summer, and to watch how they interact around this, the husband will every morning, he's always up earlier, he's out the door, you know, for work, to the gym and working out at 5:36 every morning, and without fail, there is a cup of tea waiting on the counter when she comes down into the kitchen with a post-it note that says, I love you, or have a great day, or I'm so proud of you, or kick butt today. And that really is something, as their daily practices have supported their relationship. That's something he knows she loves words. So it doesn't have to be, you know, face to face, that's always helpful. But even little post-it notes, even a little text, things like that, cards can go a long way. But it doesn't have to be a big, elaborate communication, just little things, right? That it is actually in the little things. So if words of affirmation are your partner's love language, this is how you communicate. You encourage them, you affirm them, you express your appreciation for them. You learn how to empathize with them, and you listen actively. Remember, we talked about what listening actively is, which is saying back, basically parroting back what they have said. Yeah, that sounds like you've had a really hard day, right? That's empathy, listening actively. Actions that you can take include sending an unexpected note, right? A text, a card. Encourage them genuinely and often. And things you most surely want to avoid, if this is your partner's love language, is non-constructive criticism, right? Not recognizing them or not appreciating any effort that you see them putting in. So if you're honest with yourself, can you see them making an effort to help the family, to keep the house running, to supporting you. If you see that, say something. If you think that this is your partner's love language. So the second one is physical touch. Now, I'd say about 90% of the men I work with identify this as one of their primary love languages. Physical touch is about just what it sounds like, right? People that receive and feel love when they've been touched. So it might be a massage. It might be a hug when you get home from work. It might be a small hand on the shoulder, kind of just a light touch when somebody's doing dishes and saying, and just putting a hand on them and saying, hi, you know, nice to see you. Or it doesn't even have to have words associated with it. Any physical touch, holding hands, for example. All these little things, they don't have to be big, big events, right? It's always nice if you get those big events, if this is your love language, right? But it doesn't have to be, right? Touch can make or break a relationship, and I'm not just talking about sex here. If this is your partner's primary love language, without it, they feel unloved. And you may know this feeling yourself. If you haven't been touched in a while, you feel unloved, right? Humans need to be touched, and some like it more than others, and some like it less. It's not good or bad. It's just, again, the kind of fuel that people need. A lot of things can affect this. Our histories, our previous experiences in relationships, medical conditions, stress levels, but we still all need it on some level, and it can be really simple, right? This is why there's loads of research on child development that says, right, children and infants that are touched more often have better health and mental health outcomes. People start to get a little batty when they haven't been touched. So again, touching, holding hands, kissing, hugging, sexual acts, right? If this is your partner's love language, this you really have to pay attention to what you're doing or not doing in relation to this. So it might be sitting close to each other and touching as you're watching TV, or giving your partner a massage, or taking your partner's hand as you walk to the grocery store, putting your arm around her, especially in the presence of others. That can go very, very far. You know, if you're at some sort of family event, you put your arm around her. Or giving a hug when your partner gets home, right? If this is your partner's primary love language, there's nothing more important than if she's having a bad day, holding her as she cries. You don't have to fix. Remember, we don't have to fix. It's just about hugging and holding as someone's having a rough time. So if this is your love language or your partner's love language, this is all about body language, the nonverbal things that we do, including touch to emphasize love, right? And things you want to avoid is neglecting someone physically. Long stints without intimacy, that physical intimacy, can really do a lot of damage if this is one partner's love language. Or even receiving affection coldly, right? That's just a dagger to the heart, right? If this is your love language or somebody else's. So let's talk about the next one, which is the love language of quality time. Let me ask you a question. Have you and your partner stopped having good conversations, or perhaps stopped doing the activities that you used to love doing together? Right? Quality time is all about where you're putting your focused attention, having quality conversations, and engaging in quality activities. It's doing things like planning a weekend getaway, meeting for lunch in the middle of a work day, getting a babysitter and going out for an evening or out for a mini date even, playing games with the kids, taking a vacation with the family, sitting down and talking about your day one-on-one with no distractions, right? Not while you're doing dishes, or not while you're folding laundry, or not while you're watching TV or looking at your phone. This is actual focused one-on-one quality time. So when was the last time that you gave your partner your undivided attention with no kids, no chores, no work, no phone, and just you, right? Be honest with yourself here. if this is your love language, you really want to create special moments together. They don't have to be huge romantic gestures. They can be a little mini quote-unquote picnic in your room after the kids are gone to bed, right? These little special moments, taking walks, do small things together. Weekend getaways can be really hugely effective. And the things you want to definitely avoid are distractions when you are spending time together, or long stints without any one-on-one time, right? If this is your love language or your partner's love language, you really want to be clear about the quality of time that you're spending with them. All right, so the next love language is receiving gifts. Now, oftentimes people think, oh, this means I have to spend a bunch of money, and women always want flowers and jewelry and expensive clothes or vacations. And this actually does not relate to money at all. You do not need to spend money if this is your partner's love language, or even if it's yours. And if it's yours, you'll be able to relate to this pretty clearly. So receiving gifts is, again, a symbol, a visual symbol of love. It's not money related. It's a visual reminder of the love, right? So it can be very simple, like going to the grocery store and picking up her favorite chocolate bar, or the favorite gum that, or you're somewhere and you think, oh, I know my partner really loves this thing and I'm going to bring it home. It doesn't matter whether or not it costs money. What's important is that you thought of that person, right? It's the gift of actually you. It's not about the money you spent. It's that, and also the gift of you can go beyond money, right? This is about when your partner needs you at an event. Like, I really am nervous at this event. It would be really important if you were there with me. I would feel better. And especially true in times of crisis. I know in my previous relationship, receiving gifts happens to be my love language, and it has nothing to do with money. In fact, it can be very small. But one of the things is, when my mother was dying, one of the ways that I felt really loved is if my partner was coming with me to the nursing home and coming with me to those medical appointments. And actually, that didn't occur. We had two small children, and sometimes it made sense to just divide and conquer and to get house stuff and kid stuff done. It seemed more logical for me to go to visit my mother on my own, since it was kind of a thing that you didn't want to bring kids to. But in fact, this really was detrimental, because as gifts are my love language, I really felt that absence in a much deeper way than I may have otherwise. So you don't have to wait for a special occasion, and you might have to adjust your attitude around money a little bit, right? But again, it's not about dollar signs. Having a gift or giving a gift is something that you can hold in your hand and say, look, they were thinking of me, right? Because you have to be thinking of someone when you're giving them a gift. So what's important is the thought. It really is about the thought that counts. You're going on a walk, you see a beautiful flower, and you pick it and you bring it home, right? It's something as simple as that. If receiving gifts is your love language or your partner's love language, there's a few things you want to make sure to do. Never forget a special occasion, right? That will really, and some people think, oh, this is just a girl thing. Valentine's Day is so overrated. I've definitely known men that have thought, well, giving flowers is ridiculous, because what is it? It's just this thing you cut and then it dies. So how important is that? But that, if your partner's love language is gifts, right, those things have a really big impact, right? If you're receiving a gift, if your partner's love language is gifts, and they give you something and you don't receive it with any sort of enthusiasm, if you're just sort of like, oh yeah, thanks honey, and put it to the side, that will also be impactful, because if this is her love language, for example, she's really thought about you while she's purchased this thing or made this thing or giving, or the thought behind it is pretty loving. And so you want to meet that with genuine appreciation and not with kind of an enthusiastic attitude of like, okay, thanks. Yeah. So you want to make sure to give thoughtful gifts and even small gestures. Small things matter in a big way. And express your gratitude when you're receiving a gift. All right. The next one, and I think this is the last one, because I think we've talked about all of them up until now, is acts of service. I'd say with most of the men I work with, a lot of men identify it's this one and physical touch as being their primary love language. That doesn't mean it has to be you, but I just see a lot of this. Acts of service is really about what someone is doing to show their love. So I know a couple that's been married for about 55 years, and I was in their home, and she pulled me aside as her husband was sweeping the kitchen floor, and she said, "Look how much he loves me. He sweeps the floor every morning, and I know he doesn't express his feelings very often, but every morning I see him sweep the floor, and every morning I know he really loves me." Because acts of service is her love language. Now, some people might see somebody sweeping a floor and just be like, "Thank you for sweeping the floor," because the floor is dirty and it needed to be swept. But people whose love language this is, it really means something more meaningful. I've known men who will say things like, "Doesn't she see all the things I'm doing for her? Do you think I want to be doing all these house repairs and mowing the yard and doing the gutters and fixing the bathroom? Doesn't she see how much I'm doing for her? That's for her. That's for the family," right? And often that's because it's that man's love language, that they're actually doing all of these household mundane chores, and the woman whose love language isn't acts of service isn't interpreting that as love, right? They're speaking different languages. So when acts of service might be your partner's love language, you want to use action phrases like, "I'll help," or, you know, "I'll help you do that, honey," or "I can do that for you." And they want to know that you're with them and partnered with them in the actions, right? So actions to take would include doing chores together or making them breakfast in bed, or going out of your way to actually help alleviate their daily workload. Now, you may be saying to yourself, "Yeah, well, Margaret, like, I do all those things and she doesn't freaking care," right? Or it doesn't really seem to go anywhere. So that's a place to check yourself of whether or not you think this is actually your partner's love language or if it's just yours. Things that you want to make sure to avoid is making the request of others a higher priority. Not following through on the things that you said you might do, even on big tasks or little, right? If you said you were going to do something, do it, because it's the action and those acts of service that are so deeply meaningful that will fill up the love tank when this is your partner's love language. Some other things you might want to do is to ask your wife or your partner a list of 10 things that you know they'd like you to do in the next month. That can be a beautiful act of service and way to communicate your love in this way, right? We usually all know that our partners have something that they want us to do and we might avoid it, but actually starting to tackle some of those large and small things on their honey-do list can be very meaningful if this is their love language. Like, for example, if your partner goes away, you can get the kids to help with some of acts of service. And so when she comes home, you could say, "Surprise, we love you, right? Look what we did. We organized the garage, or we went through all the old clothes," or whatever it is. You could reorganize an office or a room, or and then put a sign on that door and say, "To Sue with love," right? That would be a beautiful gesture if this was your partner's love language. Or you can hire someone to do the work that she's desperately wanting to have done if you yourself can't do it. So I want to loop back to talk a little bit more about physical touch, that love language of physical touch, because it's something I hear about almost every day in my work with men that talk about the lack of physical intimacy, that they haven't had sex in a long time, that they're just sort of expecting that that's the way it goes because, well, we have kids now and we're a certain age and isn't that just how things life rolls out? The answer is absolutely no, right? I want to ask you a question. How many of you, if this is your love language, which I'm, you know, if I had to place bets, it it likely is, are having the level of physical intimacy that you want or that you need. Do you remember all the ways you might have touched your partner in the beginning of your relationship, right? All those little exciting like zzz moments in the beginning where there's a hand on the shoulder or, you know, little tiny things as you're walking throughout a date together, right? How many of you now are going to bed every night at different times even without a physical touch or any sort of physical acknowledgement from your partner? Maybe there's no goodnight kiss or there's no loving touch to mark the beginning or the end of the day. And think of how natural this is when we are with children, for example, right? We hug and we kiss them goodbye, right? Whether they're our nieces or nephews or other children that are in our community or, you know, friends of the family or our own children. It is what we do to begin and end time together, right? It's a natural thing. And often it would feel almost kind of strange or unnatural if you didn't do that, right? If you just said, go to your room and there was no goodnight process, there was no tucking in or hug or some sort of physical acknowledgement of that person. We pat our kids on the back, right? We say they've done a good job. We give them high fives. We rub their back when we help them get to sleep. All these things that is about touch, right? And then in our marriage, we can often fall out of that habit of touching one another. And people whose love language is physical touch will often, and I'm speaking for the men that I've worked with, say they feel like they're withering away without the physical connection. Their actual connection to their own life force, to their own vitality, to their own confidence level is withering away because their tank, they're on empty, right? Their tank is completely on empty. So we've gone through all the love languages, right? Which ones jump out to you as being your partner's primary love language? I want you to write it down, right? Like, you know, write your partner's name and write your guess for what their one or two top love languages might be. And then on the next line, I want you to write what you think yours are. Is it physical touch? Is it acts of service? Is it words of affirmation? Is it quality time? What is it? And when you look at those, are they different? Are you and your partner speaking different love languages? And by the way, if you have children, I'd highly recommend you writing another little section here with your children's names and taking your best guess at what you think their love language is. And that can be a way that you can parent in a different and more fulfilling way for your child, in a way that your child actually needs. So, for example, I have one kid who needs to be cuddled every night, needs a lot of tickling and physical games and touching, and he needs that every morning and every night to begin and end his day. He craves it. He actually asks me for massages when he wants to do something for me. He's physically wanting to give me a massage or something like that. And his love language is physical touch, right? And I can very clearly see that. It's been like that since he was little. He always needed, no matter how independent he was and how much he was going off on his own to explore the world and to try new things, he needed to come back and feel that physical connection with me. Now, I have another son who actually, when you go to physically touch him, he sort of tolerates it. Like, he needs it every now and then, but it's not his way. I hear things from him about quality time. Mom, will you play this game with me? Mom, will you build Legos with me? Mom, can we go do XYZ? And what he's asking for is one-on-one, undivided attention. He also really likes words. And he and I have had this conversation, right? He's almost 8. And you can imagine children of a psychologist may be a little bit weird or more versed in the world of expressing and needs and saying what their preferences are. But he actually has told me that he likes to hear when he's done a good job, that means something to him. And so now I know using words with him and quality time with him works for that kid, but it wouldn't work so much for the other kid. It might be nice, but it's not actually filling a love tank in a way that that child needs in order to feel fueled. So, a little side note about kids there, but you can use this with kids as well. but really look at what is your love language and what is your partner's and how's it going? Where are the discrepancies? Right? And if you're not really sure about your partner's, I highly suggest that you actually, there's a lot of fun online quizzes about these things, and you can just look up love languages. You'll find a million websites and little online fun things to do that you and your partner can take, or that you can just say that you're curious, right? It can be a great conversation starter and also a way of understanding yourself, expressing your needs, and as a way of understanding what your partner may need and why, if your relationship is stressed in any way, why the fuel tanks are running on empty, and how and exactly what you can do to actually start filling their tank. Because once you start filling their tank in this genuine way, not just so that you can get something back, but actually looking at what does this person want and need through the human needs that we discussed, and through meeting them and giving them the fuel that they actually need, relationships start to shift, right? You'll see people respond differently. So that's all I've got for this module. I'm so interested to hear what you think and what you've determined your love language to be and what you believe your partner's love language to be. And you can come up with some assignments for yourself about this week I'm going to write a card, or this week every day I'm going to say one thing that I appreciate about that person if your partner's love languages was words of affirmation, for example. But I want you to pick one thing, and it does not have to be giant, to do this week that will meet and fuel your partner's love tank. So, and then come to group and let me know how it goes. So thanks for listening to this module, and we'll see you in the next one, where we'll be talking about what to do with toxic relationships. See you soon.